वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। So we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 7, entitled Lord Krishna Instructs Uddhav, Text 6. Please repeat after me. Tvam tu sarvam parityajya. Sneham svajana. Bandushu, Maya Vesha Mana Samyak, Samadrik Vicharasvagam, Tvam Tu Sarvam Parityajya, Sneham Svajana Bandushu, Maya Vesha Mana Samyak, Samadrik Vicharasvagam, Tvam Tu Sarvam Parityajya, Sneham Svajana Bandushu, Maya Vesha Manah Samyak, Samadrik Vicharasvagam. Tvam Tu Sarvam Parityajya, Bandushu, Samadra Vacharasvagam, Tvantu Sarva Parityajam, Vantanana Jandushu, Yavesha Samasanyak, Samadrik Vicharasvagam, Tvantu Sarvamanesha Cha, Matajis. Tu sarva parityajya, bandushu, maya vesha manasamya, samadrik vicharasvagam, tvam, you, tu, in fact, Sarvam, all, Parityajya, giving up, Sneham, affection, Svajana Bandushu, for your relatives and friends, Mai, in me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Avesha, fixing, Mana, your mind, Samyak, completely, Samadrik, seeing everything with equal vision, Vicharasva, wander, Gam, throughout the earth. Translation, and purport by humble disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Since the purport is very long, we'll be reading part of it. So, translation. Now you should completely give up all attachment to your personal friends and relatives and fix your mind on me. Thus, being always conscious of me, you should observe all things with equal vision and wander throughout the earth. Purport. Srimad Veer Raghav Acharya has explained the concept of equal vision as follows. Samadrik Sarvasya Brahma Makavanon Sandana Rupa Sama Drishtiman. One who is on the path of self-realization should always endeavor to see the ultimate spiritual nature of all existence. The word Mai in this verse means Paramatmani. One should fix one's mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the source of everything. Thus, as one passes one's life on the earth, using up one's allotted time, one should practice seeing all things and all people as part and parcel of the Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead. Since all living entities are part and parcel of Krishna, ultimately they all have the same spiritual status. The material nature, also being an emanation of Krishna, has a similar spiritual status. But although matter and spirit are both emanations from the Personality of Godhead, they do not exist exactly on the same level. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the spirit soul is the superior energy of the Lord, whereas the material nature is His inferior energy. However, since Lord Krishna is equally present in all things, the word samadrik in this verse indicates that one must ultimately see Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. Thus, equal vision is compatible with mature knowledge of the varieties present within this world. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments as follows on this verse. At the end of His manifest pastimes on the earth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna thought as follows within His mind. During my pastimes on the earth, I have satisfied the desires of all those devotees who anxiously desire to see me. I have duly married many thousands of queens, headed by Rukmini, whom I personally kidnapped, and I have killed innumerable demons in various places and by various means. I have attended meetings, reunions and ceremonies with many friends, relatives and well-wishers in cities such as Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka, Hastinapur and Mithila. And thus, I have kept constantly busy, coming and going in the performance of pastimes. Om Ajnan Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Vrindade Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhuva Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaurava Uravani Pratilane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyata Deshatarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I was hoping on a Wednesday there'll be less people. But I can't get away from Sadhguru Prabhu. Today's a very, very auspicious day. Very auspicious day. And actually, we will discuss a little bit also about Sri Advaita Acharya's appearance. Because though we know in one sense who he is, but really, I'm quite certain that most of us will probably find some things amazing about him. But before that, we will talk about the verse. So, the key point in this in this verse, which has been which we read today in the purport, that we should see Krishna in everything and everything in Krishna. That actually sums up all our purpose of life. Means everything that we try to do is really when. So, if you look at a literal translation of what Krishna consciousness means, because initially when we, I'm saying from my experience, you know, we say I am in Krishna consciousness. What we mean is that I've joined an organization which is helping me to come to that path. We say, use it very literally, but actually Krishna consciousness is very simply put as consciousness of Krishna, which means seeing Krishna in everything. So, on the other hand, in this world around us, and more as we go ahead, that the struggles are always for, you know, prestige, money, pride, all the other attributes for which we are judged. You know, the way we are assessed, how we our self-worth really comes up from that. We feel we are a loser if we haven't achieved anything, and if we are, we have to be more and more aspiring, no matter what the means are, the ends justified. But actually, we have to see from the Shastras constantly, and that is the reason why we follow the Shastras, because there we see the great souls, all the great personalities, and they actually have a completely different parameter. And like, for instance, they're constantly crying for the how they can see Krishna every moment, how they can chant his holy names every moment. I mean, we know about the gopis, and we consider them the most exalted personalities in the universe. The highest level is because that they were never, even for a second moment, without Krishna consciousness. So that becomes the barometer for us. And all the acharyas also have been constantly telling us, and not just telling us, but actually the leading a life which is exactly on the same pattern. There's a complete consistency right from the beginning. Like Narottam Das Thakur, in his wonderful bhajans, all his bhajans, especially when he sings, you know, Gauranga Bolite Habe, Pulaka Sharira Hai. So, primarily saying that when will that moment come when my, you know, when my eyes are filled with tears and I'm able to chant the whole Lord Hari's name. Hari Hari Bolite. Even in our Shikshashakam prayers, the 8 verses which the Lord Chaitanya himself has spoken, when he says, Yugaitam Nimeshena Chakshusha Pravata Sham, again, the same thing, that when will I be able to, when will my limbs tremble, when will I be able to, when my eyes will be filled with tears. So, for some of us, perhaps, for many of us, it may be really, perhaps sometimes depressing to know that we are very far away from that. You know, I mean, we have to be honest with ourselves and say, when will that happen? I mean, is that actually possible? But we cannot doubt the acharyas, the shastras that tell us. Which means it is a fact, it is a reality. The reality which we are in an unreal world, and the reality is that there are great personalities who have actually seen Krishna, lived a life where Krishna has come to see him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have come to see them and protected them. So there is no doubting it. Just that. So that needs to be the barometer for us all the time, and that becomes a definition of love. So again, the parameter for love today and in the Shastra is completely, there's a paradigm shift. Because here we say love means to not only pray for Krishna, but give anything and everything for his pleasure. That becomes again the underlying path. And therefore, the path of ultimate perfection, as we are explained in the Shastras, is that we have to beg for this mercy. So this is also a concept which is in our outside world, let's say, is completely alien, because begging is seen to be a very lowly activity. And of course, we are begging for just some material alms. That's a different thing. But here, when we have to actually beg, the principle of begging is that we admit we have nothing, and that we are extending a hand to receive something. And that we have, it's a sign of humility, knowing that, admitting that we are nothing and we have nothing. So that actually, but what is the consciousness for, and what do we beg for? So this begging is actually for this, the mercy of the Lord, and so that he can help us to remember him and come closer to him. The simple example is given that typically if our hands are full with anything, obviously you cannot receive anything. So an empty hand is at least is the perfect vessel for receiving something if we extend it. So extending it with a full hand, with a closed fist, which means we have said we have control over everything and we have everything, which means we don't accept or we don't want anything. An empty hand means admitting that we have nothing, and then we are actually able to receive the maximum. So in this context, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj had once mentioned that when he talked about his past, when he came to India for the first time, and he was in the Himalayas and he was living with sadhus. So he said that the sadhus, the first most important principle is that when you go out to beg, you have to make sure that your begging bowl is actually empty. Because if you go with a full bowl, if you're well-groomed, decently dressed, people will think that you don't need it. So similarly, Krishna also will see that if we are in need. Of course, yeah, we don't need to pretend, because we actually feel that we don't, and we just only need to know the reality that we don't have anything actually. Everything can go in a second. So when we go with extending our empty bowl, and with that heart full of desperation to ask Krishna to help, then Krishna will provide us the help. He's always, because he's all looking to reciprocate more than what we actually go to. Also, Queen Kunti has said in her prayers that those who are intoxicated with their birth, in their good looks, with their knowledge, and with high social status, knowledge, birth, physical beauty, they are actually handicapped in a way, because if they are full of that, they are incapable of actually being able to chant the holy names in a sincere way. It's just not possible. And she herself came as a beggar, actually. And when did she come as a beggar? She came as a beggar when her son was already an emperor, and when everything, all her miseries were externally completely over. As we see as miseries, that she had gone through the life of sufferings. And now that the war was over and Krishna was going to go back to Dwarka, that's the time when she says that let the calamities happen again and again, for then that will mean that I will see you again and again. And seeing you means there's no repeated birth and death. So, so she actually came forward also in the same mood. So why? What are the dangers? Because when we say that, well, it is not in my hands. Krishna has given me a lot of knowledge or a sharp mind. Krishna has given me birth in a very a pious family or in a very aristocratic family, given me a lot of wealth. Krishna has given me bodily beauty. The question is how we look at it. The question is, the danger is that generally when we, because people who have this are generally very much respected and appreciated and looked up upon by the world. So it is quite natural in a way to get carried away by the expectations and saying that, well, we are meeting, we are actually being respected by various people all over the world, and the higher the power or the larger the influence we have externally, so we get carried away by the judgments of people rather than by the judgment of the Shastras. So therefore there is a tendency to get, as they say, puffed up or feeling of pride, because feeling that we are responsible for our situation. And that is why Queen Kunti says that those who are intoxicated, it is with this, with their birth. So the word used is intoxicated. It's those who, intoxication means you are completely drowned in that. Generally we talk of intoxication with alcohol. So a person is, when he says he's drunk, which means he has gone beyond his limits. He's completely steeped into it. He's totally gone drunk in such a way that he has no other reality. He's only entirely in a created an artificial different world. So the same way here, when you talk of if anybody is intoxicated with this, and which is where what becomes a challenge, because the once you have it, and the value system that we follow from the by what is given to us in our occupation or in our society, community, or in our country, then immediately we get moved towards that. And then that becomes such a strong pull that then the a temple or spiritual life looks completely not only alien, but looks, you may almost be contemptuous of it, that, because they have nothing, they don't have what I have, and that's why they are all going there. This becomes the mentality. And it becomes, while the devotees would see that as a very unfortunate situation, they don't see it as, there is no condescending nature. It's just that somebody is more fortunate that we have got this kind of mercy and blessings, that we have been protected from that thinking. So therefore the association of devotees becomes most critical for us. So ultimately, if we have to remember Krishna and chant his holy names, then we have to create an environment where we can sustain that. And well, that period of struggle is there. Nevertheless, we are in a safer environment, safer zone. So that's where the association of devotees becomes critical. And Krishna, Prabhupada says that Krishna, Bhagavad Gita says, and Prabhupada expands that on regularly, that Krishna reciprocates accordingly. That means if we move towards him in whatever consciousness, if we want his help, he'll give us. If we want his help half-heartedly, he will also look at it half-heartedly. So then Prabhupada often used to quote that, give the example of this, of a baby, how a baby would cry for the mother. A baby normally doesn't call, softly and just says, mother, are you there? Can you come? No. Baby just lets go, completely those, for others it may be a disturbance, but for the mother and for the baby, it is this just between them. The anxiety levels of the mother increases enormously, and for the baby, till doesn't get the mother, the anxiety also remains. So that's the between the devotee and Krishna. So Prabhupada will always give the example, so that if you have a, and if you now have a family where you have children or small babies, then you start realizing what it means, and they suddenly start bawling like this. So this desperation like a beggar, or desperation like how a baby cries for the mother, is really the simple examples that we can actually see and examine, that do we have that feeling, and how do we understand our situation. Means if we feel that we are fairly comfortable, there's a vacuum, there's a little area, I understand it philosophically, there's a room for Krishna, I'm very fortunate, Krishna is there, but my life goes on, and I don't do any action to reciprocate in some way. First of all, our personal life has to reciprocate as to whether we believe in it, because otherwise what is the use of words? Then whatever attributes we have, if we have been blessed with some kind of talent or some background, some wealth, some contacts. In other words, how we use our mind and how we use our time, how we think, how much is it important for us, will be is the question of moving towards it. Then slowly, slowly, the anxieties of your objects of worship or your objects of serving, for instance, the temple, the deities, the devotees, that anxiety becomes your anxiety. And when that anxiety becomes your anxiety, slowly, slowly that becomes the only anxiety in future, then we can say that we are moving towards Krishna. So that is one barometer to see whether we are, that what is the happiness of the of all the, you can say, the spiritual world, if you if our happiness is also very much related to that, and similarly challenges or difficulties or problems of the spiritual world as we know it, associated with temple, devotees, Prabhupada's mission is gone, if that becomes our anxiety, then that's one barometer. And we have to, and that is something which doesn't just, it's not a matter of suddenly some flowers fall on your head and you know, awaken. It is a matter of reciprocation by Krishna. So if we really move towards it, which means it is activity-based. That consciousness has to be translated into activity, otherwise it remains just an intellectual exercise. And we have many examples. There's Maharaj Prataprudha is one classic example, very recent, only 500 years ago. He was the king, and when he had a choice, he led an exemplary life. He was a great devotee, great Vaishnava, and a great king, very powerful king also. When it came to a choice that he was being tested, but he was, it was a, that he would, if to get the association of the Lord, he had to abandon everything that he had. Everything means everything, his palaces, family, kingdom, everything, immediately, instantly, overnight. He chose that. And so he demonstrated it, that what was important for him was to be with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's not really important whether we are a king or whether we are a beggar or whether we are what we are. It's really the consciousness that we develop. So that also is a little reassuring. That means it doesn't matter where we are, who we are, why we are. That's not at all important. What is important is that from where we are, from whatever level we are in, and if we get in touch, so-called by chance, but actually it's not by chance, then that is Krishna's reciprocation, that somebody has prayed for us, somebody's mercy has worked on us, and we have given this opportunity. Now if we grab it with our own hands, move forward, wonderful. If we don't, then it is our misfortune, and then it would take a much longer time. So basically Krishna accepts our motivation, our purpose. And Prabhupada said once very beautifully, he said, if you cry in humility, that means if you cry in the need of God's mercy, Krishna's mercy, then those tears are like rainwater watering the seed of devotion. But if you were to cry as a show, or because you want to show that you are like an advanced devotee and you know it is not really come from the heart, then those tears wash away all the conclusions of the scriptures. Similarly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also said that the tears shed in love of separation, or what we, when we really, if we come to a stage like that, should be shed in total privacy. Because it doesn't come from the eyes, it comes from the heart, and that it is entire, in privacy means it is really Krishna recognizes it. We are not concerned with who else should see it. It's basically Krishna feels it, and he is in the heart, he will understand that. So Lord recognizes that. Again, many examples like Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, just like Maharaj Prataprudha, they were also the Prime Minister and Home Minister, and they gave up everything. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked them to go back, and then still, later on when the time came, he called for them. He gave up everything and went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So devotees work tirelessly, coming to this generation or this yuga, this last, since Prabhupada started the movement, is also something which is very inspiring. So when we look at the shastras and then we also look at our environment around us, what Prabhupada has created, we need to look at that just like Radhana Swami Maharaj, the other day in the book launch, he was giving the example in the story about how to be like a crane. So, similarly, we look at the larger picture. Because oftentimes we see so many things, petty things, which may affect us in our spiritual life because we notice something and then because our consciousness is not at the high level, the small pricks also really affect us. So, we make it big. Small things become big. So, if somebody says something to us or we hear something little negative about either the temple or some devotee and doesn't concern us really in one way, but nevertheless, it is as if, so it's like as if we have taken a role that we are perfect and then how this can happen and then we start debating, discussing, talking. So, this can really shake us off our path. So, actually, we have to just look at the larger picture and see that and the larger picture is that we have been given an incredible opportunity because out of and usually opportunities come, we actually understand where it comes from, perhaps why it has come, who has given it. Here, yes, we have to say it's Krishna's given, but beyond that we have no idea why we got this opportunity. It's like somebody who wins a jackpot. Also, he knows he had a ticket and he bought it. Here, nothing. It is just completely causeless. You know, he is absolutely, we have been given. But having given that and we realize that, then only we can move towards Krishna in that way. Because if we are in a grateful heart, then we'll be able to reciprocate. We'll be motivated to help others, serve others. When we help others, then slowly, the our thoughts, our life, so many things, they gradually get altered in this, to the extent that we blend and identify our being really with that life. And when that happens, then, you know, even our heroes change. People whom we respect change. Suddenly, sportsmen will be, those stars will be replaced by different stars. You don't look at external attributes, you look at the values, you look at other people's struggles, other people's beliefs, you know, and how they have been. So, and there is no shortage of that. There are, you just have to look around and it is quite amazing how devotees go through incredible challenges, like many others. But some may turn towards hatred and revenge and you know, and then we see, we only see the end result that somebody has committed a theft or a crime or something. But we don't know the whole history. While here, similar situations, devotees also all over the world are being tested. We may pass, we may fail, but if we are struggling for the right cause, and if we actually in this pass in the sense that externally we may be not achieving what we want, but since we are still struggling on the path of Krishna, not leaving our faith, that's we have passed with flying colors. So those kind of things, you know, they are very subtle. We keep we know this often. Sometimes people, I mean, devotees, regularly we are now hearing when they leave their bodies and we hear their stories. And usually in devotees, we know that we come to know much more about them after their departure. That is always unfortunate, but that is always the case because mostly they are because of their humility. So, Bhakti Charu Maharaj recently in his book, I was reading, he said that this is one aspect of how Prabhupada just how Prabhupada was completely, we know he was, everything that he did was completely Krishna conscious, but then he was once massaging him, he was a servant, so he was massaging his body, this is the last few months before he departed. So he was very overwhelmed with gratitude, Bhakti Charu Maharaj. At that time he was a brahmachari. So he spoke to, he told him that Prabhupada, when I heard that you were in New York alone, and you know, I wish I was there with you. So immediately Prabhupada replied that I was never alone. Krishna was always with me. So Bhakti Charu Maharaj realized that See, when a spontaneous reply comes, it is not an intellectual exercise. It is something which Krishna, is a matter of fact, he felt it. So Bhakti Charu Maharaj, it hit him really hard when he realized that, yeah, here I am in the presence of someone who actually never felt alone. It's like today, I can't say I'm alone because there are several people around me, but we measure it by physical proximity. Now everyone goes away, I mean, sitting alone, I'll feel I'm alone. We don't realize that Krishna is with us. So this is the difference. This is where we need to see how Prabhupada is guiding us. That when he said that I never for a moment felt bhakti, my spiritual master is not with me, and then he said Krishna was always with me, means literally every moment. That's something which is a goal for us to aspire. That's at least sometimes we would, if we hear about this, read about this, sometimes we would start thinking actually I may be doing something which is a negative thought comes, and then we think that actually Krishna is also knows what I'm thinking. It's an embarrassing thing. Normally, if I'm doing something wrong and someone comes in the room, you try to avoid it, thinking that if nobody is there, then I'll do it. You know, if I have to eat something which I'm not supposed to and nobody is there, I'll do it. But we completely forget that Krishna is watching. So that consciousness is what is what we have to cultivate. And that's what we mean by Krishna, see Krishna in everything and Krishna in, feel that Krishna is in everything and everything is in Krishna. So I'd like to just move next few minutes to about Sri Advaita Acharya and Advaita Acharya, as we see, is a part of the Panchatattva. But one of the key reasons why often we kind of why we perhaps do not realize the significance of Advaita Acharya is because generally Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna, when they came with their associates, they're all living in the spiritual world and then they are eternal associates. They come with Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu here. But Advaita Acharya is actually Krishna himself. So that sometimes we miss out because we generally associate, you know, all the, and as we see that their lives were very similar in the sense that on the earth when he came forward. So everything is quite unique about Advaita Acharya, including his parents, Kuvir Pandit. Kuvir Pandit was actually the celestial treasurer of the celestial world, the treasurer of the Kuvir. And because Kuvir was actually being a very loyal disciple of Lord Shiva, so he was blessed to come on this in the world, and he came as Kuvir Pandit, as the father of Advaita Acharya. And they had six sons. Four took sannyas and two were married. So Kuvir Pandit and his wife Labha Devi, so they were a bit despondent when the sons took sannyas. So they actually, he was a senior advisor to the king, the emperor of Srihatta, Divya Simha. So he took a leave of absence and went to the banks of, he came to Shantipur. And then they started performing austerities, penances there. And he was not only a Vedic scholar, but an expert in Vedic performing sacrifices, because he was a learned Brahmin. So when he came, then he took a vow of silence, Maunvrat. So in that time, his wife got an extraordinary dream, Labha Devi. And in that dream, she saw Sadashiv, the original form of Lord Shiva, who was actually looking to the advent of Kali Yuga and the impact it was going to have, was very sad, Lord Shiva. And in that dream, therefore Lord Shiva goes to the causal ocean, banks of the causal ocean, where Mahavishnu is resting, and pleadingly beseeched his mercy, saying that, please help me to, please empower me to do something in the Kali Yuga. And he then, knowing that Lord Vishnu would reciprocate, respond very favorably to his devotees, Lord Shiva, Sadashiva, actually started undertaking austerities for 700 years. And while he, then Mahavishnu actually came out and told him that, why do you need to do, why do you need to perform such austerities? Because you and me are one. And he embraced Lord Shiva, Sadashiv. And because they had one form, one, because they had one purpose, and they had a strong, they merged their strong compassion, they took the form, they took a combined form of and came into this world as Advaita Acharya. So Advaita Acharya is actually Sadashiv and Mahavishnu combined. So which is quite quite something. And so but the dream doesn't end there, because in the dream then after Sadashiv, Lord Shiva, Mahavishnu tells him. And then immediately Yamaraj comes running and says that, my lord, you know, if you come as Advaita Acharya like this, then I will be out of job, because nobody will come to me. There will be no more sinners if you deliver everyone, you know, because that's the purpose. So then the Lord says, no, don't worry. There will be a lot of people who will be the atheists and many wicked people, criminals, lots of people, they will increase. So he pacified him. So there are many similarities. His pastimes also, Advaita Acharya's pastime. Actually, when Advaita Acharya was born, his name was given as Kamalaksha, because the lotus-eyed one. And he was also called Advaita, because Chaitanya Charitamrita explains that that Advaita means non-different than from the Lord. He and it was also predicted, just like in Krishna's time, there also astrology predicted that this child would deliver the world. So as you see, there are many, many similarities for Mahavishnu, I mean Advaita Acharya and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was born in 1434. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born, he was already 52 years old. And he lived for 125 years. So he was 52 and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on this planet for 48 years. So Advaita Acharya was exactly 100 when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu departed. And then he's lived another 25 years on this planet before he went back to the spiritual, to join Krishna. So his pastimes were very similar, because he also enjoyed, he used his divine powers to bewilder people. And it was said that he refused his mother's breast milk and until she said Hare Krishna. So when she said, then he would do that. And and as you'll see later, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, when he was born, he also was refusing to drink. We'll come to that in time. Also in the mood of Shiva, he also became Rudra, the god of anger. And then there also he displayed some transcendental pastimes. And the poor victim generally was this King Devyasimha's son, because they were same age. So the prince, the King Devasimha and Advaita Acharya, they used to play together. So once they had gone in the cave, and then prince was mocking devotees who were chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. So Advaita Acharya, in that mood of Rudra, he was just a boy. He became so angry. He didn't do anything. He just became so angry that looking at him only, the prince was actually a very brave boy, but just looking at him, he just fainted in shock. And a little later, again, the same similar thing happened, because King Devyasimha was a devotee of Durga. So they had gone to the temple. So this Kamalaksha went in a very challenging mood and said, show me the goddess. And he refused to bow down. So the prince was very offended. But again, seeing the intensity of his anger, just seeing him only, he fainted. So... But here, because he was actually, Kamalaksha was actually playing childhood role. He was a child. So it is pastime as a child. So after he saw the prince fainting, so he ran, just like a child would run, and he hid. And then eventually many boys were sent to search and they found him, then they brought him. By that time the king had come there. He was naturally upset because he thought his son is dead, practically dead. Looked at least he was dead. And his father, Kuber Pandit, also was there. So, in front of everyone, then this little boy took some Charanamrit and sprinkled it and on this prince and he was awake and he came back to consciousness. That really surprised everyone. Another occasion they had gone, the two again, the prince and Kamalaksha had gone to Durga temple on Diwali day. And there again he refused to bow down. So the prince got offended. But this time the prince brought Kamalaksha's father, Kuber Pandit. And Kuber Pandit actually started advising him, explaining to him on deity worship and all that. So this little boy is telling his father that, my dear father, you are being misled. I think you are slightly misled. And he says, just like the root does not, you go to the root of the tree, then the tree is nourished. Similarly, if you worship the primeval Lord Vishnu or Krishna, then all the demigods, the secondary gods get worshipped. And just at that moment, astonishingly, the deity of Durga on the altar, it just burst, and from the deity Lord Durga Devi came out with a huge intensity of lights. And a mystical voice came, a booming voice in the temple, and everybody was there. And they heard that the husband never bows to the wife. So, which means that indicating that husband is Durga is Parvati and this is husband is Lord Shiva. So again as a proof that this is Lord Shiva himself. So, his guru was Madhavendra Puri. And Madhavendra Puri stayed at his house for a month and he initiated him. And he was the one who also advised Advaita Acharya to get married. And there were two primary reasons. One, he told him because he saw that he was very attached to his deities, Radha Madan Gopal. And he said, generally renunciants, you know, their worship would end when their life ends. But here, you know, the householders would be able to carry on for generations. And he assured Advaita Acharya that for 14 generations, any offences, committed in deity worship, I will personally take that responsibility. So he encouraged him. And of course, the other real reason was that, like Nityanand Prabhu and other stalwarts, he wanted to preach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He knew what the occasion was, and then the best way to reach the world, preach, spread around, would be going as a husband-wife team. He and Haridas Thakur were very, very, very close, especially close. They had a very special relationship. He actually trained Haridas Thakur in Krishna consciousness, in the basic steps. And he was a Brahmin, and yeah, Haridas Thakur was born in a Malecha family. But that was a clear demonstration. He actually created a cave for him and looked after him well, and they became the best of friends. He also was initiating. He initiated many devotees, Vasudev Dutt, Bhagavatacharya, Shyamdas, and then he also Raghunadas Goswami's guru. Yadunandan Acharya was Advaita Acharya's disciple. And then he also initiated Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's parents. And that's an interesting story when, again, as I earlier mentioned, that Nimai, when he was a child, he would sometimes refuse to take his mother's breast milk. And once it happened for a very long period, so everyone got anxious because if he's not drinking milk, and he will fall sick. So they called various physicians, they couldn't do anything. Then his parents called for Advaita Acharya because they knew that he's, it was actually Advaita Acharya's calls that actually brought Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu really. So Advaita Acharya came, and then his analysis of the situation was that this Nimai is not having it because this is not offered. The milk is not offered. And the only way to make it offered is that we have to initiate. So he initiated his parents, and as soon as his Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mother was initiated, immediately he started drinking milk. So then he, Advaita Acharya, then duly married Sita Thakurani and her sister, Sri Devi. Sita Devi and Sri Devi, both were exalted personality. Of course, Sita Thakurani was Yogamaya. And there's Bhagavatacharya Shyamdas. He's the one who put the marriage externally together by saying that this is Yogamaya and Krishna. What better combination do you want? You know, so the Lord is there. So that's how they got came together. They had six sons. All six were initiated by the mother, Sita Thakurani. But three were particularly favorites of Achyutanand and Gopal and Krishnadas. Three were a little deviant and Advaitacharya rejected them. He was, of course, the most important reason we know that he came to really call Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it was really Mahavishnu who comes, and then he actually beseeched the Lord with his prayers and the Ganges, offering Tulsi and Ganga water. And the prayers were so strong that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to fulfill his desire and to spread this, spread the holy name. And again, the same situation when he, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later when he was born, all devotees were in the Ganges. Similarly, here also the holy name was being reverberated when Kamalaksha was born also. Also, he was the first person, when the worship of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started in Nandan Acharya's house, the first time they were celebrating it, he got the news and he rushed there with his deity paraphernalia. And this was Namo Brahmani Devaya, Go Brahmani Hitayacha. He's the one who actually sang it first there. And I repeat, obeisances to Krishna, who's the Lord of Govinda, who's Govinda, Lord of the Brahmins, friends of the cows. So he was the first, in that sense, first one to actually boldly proclaim that Advaita Acharya is none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because a very famous pastime, is Nimai Pandit. Though he was 52 years old, so obviously Nimai Pandit, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, looked at him in a very reverential way. And he wanted to have that, but he always saw himself as a disciple or as a servant of the Lord. So it was a real, he went through a very elaborate ruse by actually started to proclaim, deliberately trying to preach impersonalism just so that you would attract the Lord's anger. And he wanted to provoke, because his goal was that the Lord would, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would actually somehow accept him, means he would chastise him out of anger, and that would be, and then, he was dying for that. He was wanting that. So he went to such an extent that the Lord came, and then in that transcendental mock anger, he started beating him. And of course, Sita Thakurani comes and says that, "My Lord, he's an old man. No, please have mercy on him." So this is all for the external purpose, but the Advaita Acharya was in ecstasy because this is exactly what he wanted. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also knew this. And then Mother Sachi also, who was actually a disciple of Advaita Acharya. So, one would consider a minor offense, but she, in her mind, she thought negatively about her guru, because she felt that he's the one who first preached to Vishwaroop, the older brother, got him to take sannyas, and then now he's going to take my son, the younger one also. So she was thinking a little negatively about, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew the mind. So he kind of got her to accept, to touch the, he again created a situation where she could, when Advaita Acharya fainted for a moment, and she took her the dust and atoned. So basically, Advaita Acharya was the cause of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu coming, and he was also the cause for him to go back. So this is one of the, because at the end he gave a very cryptic poem wherein he indicated in that poem that nobody understood except one or two people and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that now your time is up. Means if you want to go, that's fine. What you've come, you've really achieved, and you can go back. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took that as a signal and departed. So Advaita Acharya's significance goes beyond what we consider to be just the all the pure devotees. Of course, he was Mahavishnu and Sadashiv combined, and he's the one who brought Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the world, which is now history, and which really is the only time that Krishna has come in this yuga, and he's the one who on whose call Krishna goes back. And in between, we see how he how intimate he was with the Lord. So, Shri Advaita Acharya ki jai. So we'll end here and thank you very much. Hare Krishna.